Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to multifamily industry operations. I'm your host, Paul Marks, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio, and we have a great show with a wonderful guest who is extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. Today, we're discussing the topic of stabilizing non-functioning multifamily assets. Joining me by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran, the fantastic Amy Rubenstein, the Chief Executive Officer of Clear Investment Group. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and you're based out of Chicago, correct?
That is correct.
All right. So we have a lot of listeners in the Chicago area and in that part of the country, mid-America. So I want to talk about non-functioning assets as far as let's define what that means. What does non-function asset mean for our listeners?
Great. What we buy with our company is we look for properties that are very distressed and unstabilized. So they're not functioning in the sense that a lot of people aren't paying rent and there's a lot of vacancy and there might be some deferred maintenance going on with the asset. So when you look at the financials of the asset, it's often negative cash flowing assets. There's often a staff that's a bit dysfunctional, and it's just not running the way a regular company or a regular property should run.
And what are the different types of assets that you find are non-functioning?
So we are exclusively multifamily, and we look for large apartment complexes across the country. And then we find that community, and we try to find a community that's not functioning the way that the rest of the neighborhood is functioning. So, for instance, if the market occupancy of a particular submarket is somewhere around 95%, we usually find that the occupancy in the buildings that we take over are maybe sub 70%. They could be as low as 20, 30, 40% occupied. And or it could be that there's occupancy, but not economic occupancy or effective occupancy. So maybe people just aren't paying their rent. And so those are the things that we look for, and that's kind of the type of distress that we normally are finding.
And what type of or what are the different types of cities or geographical areas that you find? Are these in major metropolitan areas?
Yeah, so we're mostly looking in tertiary and secondary cities. So I would say our core focus is on tertiary cities. So we look for a city that has a population of around 150,000 people or greater. But to give you some examples, we just recently bought in Shreveport, Louisiana. We just bought in Syracuse, New York. We're going under contract right now on a portfolio in Oklahoma City, a portfolio in Springfield, Massachusetts. So those are the types of cities we're looking for.
And what class of assets are you normally finding these distressed properties in?
So we're always looking at workforce housing, which we would consider to be C-class assets. Mm-hmm. We're looking for the bulk of America. It's that workforce of America. So we're talking about, you know, truck drivers, restaurant staff, teachers, janitors. It's that type of employment that we're looking for. So anywhere, it could be anywhere between $40,000 and $70,000 a year annual household income. And that's what we consider to be workforce housing, C-class assets.
Okay. And what have you seen in recent years? Has there been a trend where during more stressed economic times, you start to see more and more distressed assets become available? How do those trends work out as far as finding distressed assets?
Yeah, this is a really incredible time right now to find distressed assets. And then there are always distressed assets in the market. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just how do you find them, where do you find them, and how plentiful are they? And right now there's a lot. And it's for a few different reasons. I would say the bulk of what we find is from owners that really struggled managing through COVID. You know, that was a tough time for multifamily to manage through. Mm-hmm. Because you had to navigate not being able to file evictions for a while. You had to navigate the economic stress of the tenants themselves. And it took a lot of micromanaging to get through that time. And most landlords did do quite well during that time, and they got themselves back on track and people recovered. But not everybody did. And it's the landlords that struggled through that period, and then any little thing can push them over the edge. And in this case today, what we're seeing is, you know, that rise of interest rates is often that one thing that pushes them over the edge. It could be other things, too. It could be something personal that happens in someone's life. It could be you know, it could be the hardship that the tenants are feeling now from interest rates rising and inflation that sort of really just pushes it over the edge. But once a landlord starts to feel that pain where they're receiving less income in, they start putting less money back into the property, therefore more people stop paying their rent, therefore less income is coming in, there's less money to put back into the property, and it becomes a downward spiral. And that's a lot of what we're seeing. And I could just, you know, just to give you a couple examples, we bought a portfolio in Shreveport, and that was really exactly what we saw is, you know, tenants stopped paying their rent, and so things stopped getting fixed. And if, you know, we walk into the tenants' units of the people who aren't paying rent, and we say, you know, what is it that's causing you not to pay your rent right now? And they'll say back to us things like, well, I haven't had my toilet fixed in 6 months. And we'll say, all right, well, if we can get your toilet fixed, is that going to solve your problem? Are you going to be able to start paying your rent again? We had a property that you couldn't even pull up to the property because the parking lot was so bad. It was in such disrepair that you would get a flat tire if you pulled into the property. The potholes were so big. But it was the entire parking lot was like that, and it was maybe a 10-acre complex. And so it's a very easy fix, but a very expensive fix. Right? It's a $500,000 parking lot. So for a landlord who's struggling through, it's going to be hard to pull out $500,000 to replace a parking lot. But what happens is if that's what people see when they start to pull into the complex, you're not going to get new tenants coming in. So leasing is going to be really hard. So it starts to deteriorate the property. So, you know, the first thing we can come in and do is take care of that parking lot. So those are sorts of examples that you see of, you know, why does a property start to deteriorate? And the tenants start to see that the landlord's not putting in money, and tenants stop paying their rent.
We've got about 3 minutes left in the segment. Tell me a little bit about, because you mentioned that as far as your company is concerned, you look for large properties. What do you find is the range of number of units that you see out there as far as distressed properties? Are they, you know, less than 200 units mostly, or how do you find the size of these properties?
Yeah. Our company focuses on 300 units and up. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for anywhere between 300 and 1,500 units in a portfolio. But that could be made up of multiple buildings.
Sure.
But generally speaking, we generally don't buy buildings that are less than 100 units and in a portfolio that's at least 300 units. And sure, you can always find distress in smaller properties too. So you get the same sort of issues in a smaller size. It just sort of magnifies as you get bigger. You know, it's easier for a landlord to come up with enough money to fix a 6-unit building. It gets harder. Things start to fall apart more quickly the larger it gets. But absolutely, you can find distress at any size.
All right, we're going to break it here. We're going to be back right after these messages. I want to talk a little bit in the next segment about some of the causes of having non-functioning assets, take a little deeper dive into that. So we'll be back right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
multifamily properties' water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
Looking for a solution to balance your assets? Tired of wasted time managing your day-to-day bookkeeping, buggy software implementations, inaccurate financials? Or maybe you're worried about a pending audit. Would you like more time to focus on revenue-generating activities versus accounting administrative activities? Here at Balanced Asset Solutions, we are a CPA firm that specializes in property management platforms, including Yardi and Appfolio. You can reach Balanced Asset Solutions now at 619-415-6826. Go visit our website at www.balancedassetsolutions.com. Don't delay. Call Balanced Asset Solutions today.
Control by Net provides communities with video surveillance solutions accessible 24/7 from any web browser or mobile device. Our remote guarding reduces crime in garages and mailrooms. Many top owners and managers already utilize our services and love the single sign-on feature to see all properties. As NAA and NMHC members, Control by Net only serves multifamily. Our cloud and managed video solution is consistently voted easiest to use. We meet any compliance requirements. Visit us at www.controlbynet.com or email us for a free site survey at crproperty@controlbynet.com.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. And we're discussing the topic of stabilizing non-functioning multifamily assets. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran, the wonderful Amy Rubenstein, the Chief Executive Officer of Clear Investment Group. Before we jump back into the conversation, I do want to remind our listeners, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. So, Amy, before the we ended the last segment, I mentioned that I want to discuss some of the additional types of causes for assets to become non-functioning and distressed. You mentioned, you know, COVID is one of those, but crime, does that play a big role in that? If there's a lot of crime
absolutely.
In the area?
Absolutely, yes. We just recently bought a portfolio of properties in Syracuse, New York, and the main reason that those properties started to deteriorate was because of crime. And, you know, we looked back to try to see what was the cause of this, because the area itself didn't have a lot of crime, but the property did. And so the problems for this particular neighborhood were coming from this property. And I think it's similar to that spiral that we were talking about as far as deferred maintenance, right? You stop fixing up a property and tenants stop paying rent, and then you have less money to fix up that property. And with crime, it's similar. You know, as soon as you start to see criminal behavior or activity, if it's not nipped in the bud right away, it starts to feed upon itself, and it really takes staying on top of to keep it from happening. In this particular property, something that happened was the landlords were struggling with occupancy, and we're struggling with people paying their rent, and so they started taking in anyone just to fill up the unit. And that can be tempting as a landlord when you have high vacancy. But as soon as you stop running background checks and you know, criminal background checks and stop running credit checks, you start to deteriorate your tenant base. And when your tenant base starts to deteriorate, you start to bring in crime. And then it's also, if it's not responded to right away, then you get more crime, because criminals see that this is a place that accepts that. So, you know, some of the rules we have in our company are, if we see graffiti, it has to be removed within 24 hours of seeing that graffiti. So we don't want anything to be tagged, we don't want our property to ever be looked at as accepting any sort of vandalism, right? The simplest form of crime. So that is not acceptable on our property, so we remove it immediately. But we're quite strict on background checks, as far as, you know, we don't allow anyone who has any violent crime in their background, because it's going to bring problems to the property. This particular landlord started teaming up with a program that was for drug users. But what happens is, when you start to allow a lot of drug users into your property, you get a lot of drug dealers at your property. And that was something that started to occur. Once you have drug dealers coming to your property, then they start to take over themselves, and you no longer have full control of your property. So some of the ways that we can, you know, that we can combat that, we work very, very closely with the local police department, local law enforcement, making sure that everyone's on the same page with what's going on. So when we first come into to look at a property, we're going to be asking the city and asking the police department, what are the crimes that you're seeing around this property? Why do you think those crimes are occurring? And how do you think we can solve those crimes? And we listen to what they have to say. And if we have some sort of consensus, as yeah, that's what we're seeing as well, and we can resolve this problem the way they're telling us to resolve this problem, and then, you know, we start to build a cohesive team. So with our team and the city's team, we can start to tackle some of those crimes. And some of that is about making sure that we have excess presence of the police force. If we're talking to the police on a regular basis, they're more apt to help us try to tackle the crime. If they see the efforts coming from us, then they're willing to put in that effort too. We start to look for, squatters in the units that have come and live in units to become their office for any illicit activity. We see that happen a lot, so we have to really make sure that we're securing the properties, that doors are being locked, that we're checking vacant units every day and making sure that nobody's come inside to live in those units. That if we see any illegal activity, that we're giving notices to those tenants right away and that we're filing evictions based on illegal activity. And we're really just making it known to the property that we have a zero tolerance policy on crime. Often what we'll do to eliminate that when we first get in is we'll approach the units that are causing any sort of crime or deterioration that we can see in the property, and we'll say, hey, look, I know this is how the property went before, we have to clean this up. We're bringing in the dollars and the efforts right now to clean up this property. You might have a balance on your ledger. We're willing to waive that balance. It's time for you to move on. And we try to have that conversation up front. And that often works. Sometimes it doesn't, and it needs to go another way. But those are the proactive steps that we'll start to take. Mostly, you know, if we can get any police to come live in the property, to have their cars on site. And in an extreme situation, so for instance, in Syracuse that I was referring to, there was so much crime in the beginning that we had to put security in place. And so that's not always something that we do, and we don't always have to take that step, but in this particular situation we did. And we started checking IDs for all of our tenants that would enter the building, and that really started to help crack down on crime right away. And very soon we started getting it under control. And it's an expensive route to take by having full-time security guards on site, but sometimes it's the steps you have to take in the very beginning.
We've got about 4 minutes left in this segment. I wanted to ask you, because you touched a little bit in the first segment too on the, you know, the physical aspect of a property as far as deferred maintenance and the issues that can cause. But let's talk about the managerial component as far as causing non-functioning assets. What have you found in that aspect?
Yeah. Well, we always like to keep the staff that is current when we take over a new property. They don't always stay, and there's often quite a bit of turnover in the first 6 months. But our first attempt is to try to keep everybody in place, both the tenants and the staff. And what we'll mostly find is that the staff just didn't have enough leadership telling them exactly what to do, or there wasn't enough structure. And so it's like looking at any distressed company and figuring out why is this company not functioning. And it usually comes down to processes and procedures. So we are making sure that the managers have processes and procedures in place and that they're the system that we use. As we manage large properties all over the country, we have to have a similar model in every place to make it most efficient so we can all communicate very well. So everybody has to get on the same page as far as here are our policies and procedures. Here's what we do when someone doesn't pay their rent. Here's how we lease units. And it can be something very, very simple. For instance, when we took over our portfolio in Shreveport recently, we said, all right, occupancy is quite low. Let's figure out why that is. Can you show us how you're showing units? And they said, well, we just show pictures of units. We don't actually show the physical units themselves. That was mind-boggling to us, but we've seen that happen over and over, where leasing agents are just showing pictures in the leasing office. They're not even walking over to the units themselves. And I think that was sort of a remnant of COVID when people, you know, didn't want to be around each other so much. Mm-hmm. But that was something that had to be changed back right away, and it didn't get changed back. We'll talk about, okay, now you're showing the unit. How do you show that unit? What are the ways that you know, how do you speak to the tenants when they come in? How do you answer the phone? What's the procedure when people make a maintenance request? And so we could dig into, you know, how is a manager interacting with current tenants and with prospective tenants and making sure that we're really maximizing that tenant experience so that people can find a really great place to live. It makes people want to stay, and it makes people want to come.
And we've got about a minute left. Talk a little bit about how the non-functioning asset can affect your residence and your vacancies as well as your income.
I missed can you repeat that question one more time?
I'm sorry. How a non-functioning asset affects the residence, the vacancies, and the income. And we have about a minute left.
Sure. So, you know, if tenants aren't seeing their needs met, then they're more apt to go find a new place when their lease comes up. And so if they put in the maintenance request and there isn't a procedure around how that maintenance request gets completed, then likely they're not going to be satisfied with the way that it gets completed. And eventually they're going to get tired of it. And when it's time to renew that lease, they're moving on. Or if the landlord's asking for an increase a year later, they don't see the value in that increase. So that's usually what we're seeing as far as, you know, why are people moving out? It's because they're not getting the attention that they need while they're there. And then same thing coming in. You know, if someone's coming into a leasing office and the management seems to be a mess, it's not really giving them that feel that they're not feeling comfortable, like they're going to be taken care of. And so that's kind of what we're seeing as far as why it affects occupancy. And same thing with people paying rent, you know, collections.
Okay. All right. Well, we are going to leave it there. We're going to be back after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Say goodbye to pen and paper processes, labor shortages, and unhappy residents, and say hello to HappyCo, the only multifamily platform that supports every stage of your property lifecycle. Improve your portfolio with Happy Asset, the ROI-driving asset optimization solution for owners, acquisition directors, and asset managers. Manage your portfolio with Happy Property, a suite of intuitive tools that streamline operations, empower teams, and delight residents. Service your portfolio with Happy Force, an always-on remote maintenance workforce Northwest for multifamily specialists designed to increase resident satisfaction. HappyCo, multifamily solutions to smile about. For more information, visit the website at happy.co.
SMART is a national multifamily research and analytics company providing market, property, and floor plan level data to track performance, evaluate competitive strategies, and identify potential investment opportunities. Their innovative web-based software and mobile application contains extensive searchable inventory of granular historical data, floor plan by floor plan rents, concessions, and availabilities for enhanced analysis and forecasting. For more information or to sign up for a free trial, go to smartapartmentdata.com.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
We are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio, and we're discussing the topic of stabilizing non-functioning multifamily assets. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran, the fabulous Amy Rubenstein, the Chief Executive Officer of Clear Investment Group. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rev, the leasing management company. Rev is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. HappyCo, multifamily solutions to smile about. Control by Net, providing multifamily video surveillance and remote guarding, solving your security needs. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties. Balanced Asset Solutions, CPAs with expertise in multifamily property management. DirecTV, the ultimate entertainment experience, is now available to all multifamily residents. Smart Apartment Data, the most comprehensive and up-to-date intelligence on the multifamily industry. And CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Amy, in the first segment, we talked about different types of distressed assets, where you find them, where, you know, the types and sizes and so forth. And in segment two, we talked about some of the causes of that an asset can become non-functioning or distressed, whether it's crime, the physical, not deferred maintenance issues, the managerial, or even trying to bounce back from COVID. But that, now I want to talk about some of the solutions. But one of the things that is I find interesting when I talk to different guests on the show over the last 6 years is how differently due diligence is being done. When you're looking at a distressed property and you're going through the due diligence process, is it any different than on a property that's functioning or is not distressed? Do you have to take a deeper dive? What are some of the things you recommend?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you're looking at distressed assets versus non-distressed assets, there's a few different components to due diligence, and one of them would be the financial due diligence. So what are we seeing with books and records? And when you have distressed assets, you're often seeing that nothing's really making sense. The seller's kind of lost control over things going on. They're not keeping the best books and records, or things are inconsistent, or they're trying to paint a better picture than what actually exists. And so things don't really line up. Maybe the leases aren't really matching the rent rolls, or rent rolls aren't matching the P&Ls, and it just looks like a pile of junk when you sit and you look down at these financials. Versus when you have a stabilized asset, everything's really, you know, ticking. You can check off all the boxes, and you're really seeing things in a line. If the property is stabilized, the seller is showing the actual of what is existing. But with non-stabilized assets, it gets a little bit trickier for people because they really – things are not looking good, and so they're trying to paint the best picture, or they just don't have the records and you're digging through things. And so what we usually have to do is going back and create our own sets of financial records. So we'll take what the seller gives us. It might be true, might not be true. Then we have to recreate it all on our own. It's also hard to really look at a distressed property and see what are expenses going to be. Because right now, the expenses are what they are, which is, even if you're looking at what actual true expenses are, it could be that they're not spending enough money on the property to make the property what it needs to be, so your expenses are showing under what they need to be, or the opposite. The expenses got way out of control, which is causing some of that distress. And so, therefore, you have to figure out how you're going to reduce those expenses. And so what those existing expenses are on a non-stabilized asset is very different than what those existing expenses are going to be on a stabilized asset. So on a stabilized asset where you can look at those expenses and say, oh, these are the expenses I need to maintain a stabilized asset. You're not going to see that on non-stabilized. So you have to start from scratch. All right, what is landscaping going to cost me? What are utilities going to cost me? You know, you look at a heating bill in a place that has a hard winter, and if half of your units are vacant, you're paying for heat and half of those units. Well, that might not be the case when you take over the building and you get it up to occupancy and now your heating bill goes down. So you have to just completely reimagine what those expenses are going to look like. And then same thing with the income, right? We're not looking at if you're looking at the income on a distressed asset, it doesn't really mean much in comparison to what the property is going to be bringing in once you have your occupancy or once your rents are at market rents. So you just have to redissect everything. So it just means the due diligence process is a lot longer or more intense, let's say, because we're pretty quick with our due diligence. We're doing most of our due diligence within 2 weeks.
You know,
on the physical side.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's when you're taking over a building where all of the units are occupied and tenants are paying the rent, you know that the units themselves are in somewhat decent condition because tenants are living there and they're paying the rent. When you've got vacant units, you have no idea what those conditions of those units are. You don't know if those appliances are working. You don't know if the heat is working. You don't know if the plumbing's working, the electrical. You have no idea because nobody's living there to tell you that. So the due diligence process on the physical side is also much more intense. You really have to look into every vacant unit. So it's just more. There's just more of it.
You know, I would say that if I asked several people over the last, prior to COVID and maybe even part when the pandemic was going on, it was a seller's market where they, sellers, I'm talking about in general, not necessarily non-functioning assets, where, someone would put on the market and they would get, a bunch of different offers. And they can pick the best offer they have. What do you find when you're looking at distressed assets? Is it a seller's market for those folks, or is it there's very few buyers who want to take on that risk of taking over a property that's not functioning?
Yeah, there are times when it is a seller's market, even with distressed assets. I would say right now it's more of a buyer's market, and that's because of rising interest rates. So when interest rates are as high as they are today, or at least it's that drastic of a change from where we were 12 months ago to where we are today, then you see a flip from a seller's market to a buyer's market. Lending is a lot tighter right now, so it's harder for people to get loans, specifically in distressed assets. When the lending market tightens up like it is right now, the first thing that the lenders want to do is reduce their own risk. And so convincing a lender to lend on an unstabilized distressed asset is much harder than having them look at a stabilized asset. And so that's why it becomes a buyer's market. And so that's where we're at right now, which is great. This is the time we love. We're in our absolute dream time because there's so much opportunity out there and a lot less competition.
Exactly.
When interest rates go up, the buyers start to disperse and disappear because lending's hard. So you get a lot less buyers in there. So it becomes a really, really great buying market for us, particularly right now. So we're on a major buying spree.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes left in the segment, and I wanted to ask you, talk a little bit about the process for making the improvements and how do you prioritize things with about 2 minutes left.
Sure. When we take over a property, the first thing we're going to do is try to convince the current tenants that we are on their side, that we want the same thing that they want. We want to improve their lives. And so the first dollars we're going to spend are going to be on dollars on things that they can see, improvements that the tenants themselves can see right away. And that's not all of our improvements the tenants can see. We want to make sure that they are seeing it. So for that example I was talking about, when you have that big parking lot that's a mess, we're going to rip up that parking lot and replace it right away. Then they know that we're serious, that we mean what we say. We're actually going to make things better for them. We will right away get a list of all the outstanding maintenance requests and start really fixing those maintenance requests for tenants. And then the next thing we're going to do is make sure that we have enough units that are rent ready so that we can start leasing, because the property that is safer and more productive is a property that is occupied. So we want to increase our occupancy right away, both by retaining our current tenants, also by bringing in new tenants. So we're making sure that we have enough rent-ready units that we can start increasing our occupancy. So that's where our first dollars are going to start to go.
All right. Well, we are going to break it here. We are going to be back right after these messages with our final segment of this episode. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation: mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Control by Net provides communities with video surveillance solutions accessible 24/7 from any web browser or mobile device. Our remote guarding reduces crime in garages and mailrooms. Many top owners and managers already utilize our services and love the single sign-on feature to see all properties. As NAA and NMHC members, Control by Net only serves multifamily. Our cloud and managed video solution is consistently voted easiest to use. We meet any compliance requirements. Visit us at www.controlbynet.com or email us for a free site survey at crproperty@controlbynet.com.
Say goodbye to pen and paper processes, labor shortages, and unhappy residents, and say hello to HappyCo, the only multifamily platform that supports every stage of your property lifecycle. Improve your portfolio with Happy Asset, the ROI-driving asset optimization solution for owners, acquisition directors, and asset managers. Manage your portfolio with Happy Property, a suite of intuitive tools that streamline operations, empower teams, and delight residents. Service your portfolio with Happy Force, an always-on remote maintenance workforce for multifamily specialists designed to increase resident satisfaction. HappyCo, multifamily solutions to smile about. For more information, visit the website at happy.co.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
We are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, coming to you exclusively from the Smart Apartment Data Studio. We're discussing the topic of stabilizing non-functioning multifamily assets. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me by phone is a longtime multifamily industry veteran, the awesome Amy Rubenstein, the Chief Executive Officer of Clear Investment Group. So, Amy, we've talked a little bit in the last segment about interest rates and how that is the fact that they're what's happened with interest rates spiking in the last year has been great for you, for companies that are looking for these non-functioning distressed assets. You mentioned in the first segment about that you focus on secondary or tertiary markets. Tell us a little about why you do that and what types of markets. You mentioned some of the places, Shreveport, Louisiana, but what other parts of the country do you find that this is a good opportunity?
Sure. So the reason that we really like to tertiary and secondary cities, so we're really looking for stabilized markets, and we don't want a market that is necessarily a growth market or a deteriorating market. We don't want the biggest metropolitan areas because they garner a lower cap rate on the sale price, and so the cash flow isn't usually as strong, and we are looking for strong cash flow. The reason that we want a stabilized market as opposed to a growth market, I mean, it's obvious why we don't want a deteriorating market, right?
Right.
That you can figure out yourself. But we don't really want to look for a growth market because it has a lot of assumptions of the future, and we really want to focus on what do we know today. Our particular model focuses on what is in existence today, and how do we maximize value of what the asset is today? So we don't want to tell the future or be fortune tellers and, you know, try to really anticipate what's coming, but rather really capitalize on what exists. And when you have a growth market, you have all this anticipation of what the future is going to bring, and therefore people start to mark up those assets, and the cap rates, properties start to trade at a lower cap rate, and so the prices are higher to get into the market, and so it ends up being you end up again seeing lower cash flow on deals, and so that's why we look for markets that are very, very stabilized. There's a two-part question there. What's the second part to that?
Well, the second part is. I'll lead you to another question, which to me kind of leads into it, is why right. C-class assets?
So I find that I've been in this business for 20 years, and I've owned all sorts of asset classes. I really have focused mostly on multifamily, but also I've had retail and office and industrial. I've had A-class, B-class, C-class, D-class properties. And the reason I really stand with multifamily C-class is because it's what I find is the most stable through all different types of markets, both up and down. So when the market gets really high, people are moving out of those D-class assets. They don't want to be in the worst places. And when the market gets low, people are dropping asset classes when their income is struggling. So you see a decrease on the A-class markets first when the market drops. And people are starting to drop down to B-classes. But the workforce housing that lives in that C-class housing is always necessary. It's always relevant. In the high market, in the low market, it really stays the most stable. And so that's where we really like to live.
And then as far as distressed assets, what typically are you looking for? And specifically, what kind of distress do make sense to try and make an investment?
Yeah, we're really looking mostly for managerial distress. So I don't want to buy a building that was hit by a hurricane and 200 units are down to the studs and everything has, you know, is waterlogged and needs to be completely rebuilt. That's more of a development play. Mm-hmm. We're not really a development company. I sometimes call us a redevelopment company, but we're really trying to revitalize an asset to where it was before. But I don't want to be so focused only on construction. I really want properties that have fallen apart for other reasons, and some of those reasons that we touched on. But that high vacancy, high delinquency, that's what we're really looking for. And we're really trying to look for the cause of that being in the management and in the ownership itself, and not so much in the problem, in the fact that there was an earthquake that took out the property. And that's more of a development play. So
what type of I mean, no one can predict the future as far as what interest rates are going to do. How long do you think that this golden time of being a buyer's market in distressed assets is going to go on?
Yeah, that's a great question. People ask me this all the time. You know, when is it the bottom of the market? And this is the third downturn I've been in my career. And I will say, we have no idea what the future is going to bring. We have no idea exactly where in the market cycle we are. We know we're in the downturn. We know we've been in the downturn for the last, at least 6 months. But we don't know where we're at. Are we in the beginning of it? Are we in the middle of it? Are we at the end of it? It's very hard to tell. It's why, you know, what we currently buy in a fund structure, because we like to make sure that we're really capitalizing on the full downturn or on as much of that downturn as possible, and so that we're buying in all points of that downturn. But I will say, you know, interest rates were just bumped up. Maybe they're going to bump up one more time. It could be more than that. I doubt that it'll be much more than one more bump up, but it could happen. And then it'll flatten out for a little while, and eventually, you know, we think that interest rates will go down, but we don't know how long this is going to take. And so right now things are so up in the air that people are still nervous and lenders are still tight right now. And so we know that we are still in that downturn without the downturn turning anytime in the very near future. So we've probably got a while to go where we're sitting in this downturn. If I had to guess, I would say we're going to be in it for another 12 to 24 months. I don't know how much longer beyond that we'll be in it.
What would be your – I want to ask you this question, then I want to transition to something else. But I wanted to ask you, what are the three tips that you could give to somebody who is faced with having to stabilize a non-functioning asset? What are the top three things that you think they should be paying attention to?
This is a long game. So I would say it definitely takes persistence and, you know, staying on top of a method. You know, pick your method of how you're going to stabilize it and stick to that method. It sometimes can take a little while to start to see the results from whatever that method is. I think the number one reason that things fall apart is lack of communication. So that's communication mostly, I would say, with the tenants, the way that the owners communicate with the tenants, because that's how you're building your lifeline, your bridge to your income. If the tenants aren't happy, they're not going to pay rent and you're not going to have income, and you can't do anything at your property without income. So I would say communication with tenants is number one. And then you want to make sure you're communicating with the city itself. You have, you know, good lines of communication with police department, with code enforcement, with the mayor's office, making sure that if your property is that distressed, those are the people that care about that and they want to know what's going on. So keeping those lines of communication open are really important. And then also your lender. Making sure they're understanding what they're getting into when they're coming on as a partner, so that they don't get surprised when, you know, you start to see those struggles in trying to stabilize. They should know where it's at in the beginning so that they're on your side and on your team. So communication is the second thing I would say. And then lastly, what is another piece of advice I could give? To be constantly have your eyes on the property. I think too many owners are absent owners. They turn over the property to a management company and just expect that someone else is going to take care of the problems. But the person who cares most about the future of the property is the actual owner themselves. And so making sure that you constantly have eyes on the property, that vacant units are always walked, that the property is always walked itself, and that you're seeing firsthand what's going on and not just listening to what someone else says is going on.
That's all great advice. I want to transition now. We got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Tell our audience how you got started in the business.
Sure. I started 20 years ago in California. I was buying small rent-controlled properties, which was a really great learning ground because I learned that, you know, to be very, very detail-oriented. And then as I started to grow, my portfolio expanded. I started buying non-rent-controlled properties as well, but really keeping that fundamental idea of making sure that you're really paying attention to the details and really working on micromanaging each and every tenant relationship. So I've been expanding, and over the years, about 10 years ago, I moved to Chicago and started buying more nationally instead of just in California, where my first 10 years were. And now I buy all over the country, and really focusing on very exclusively in this market of distressed large multifamily complexes, and making sure, you know, staying very consistent with our model and what we do. And we just launched a new opportunistic fund in December and started buying these large assets and buy all over the country. And we really look for the property first, the deal first, and then we dig into the submarket itself. We are about a third of the way purchased through this fund right now. It's a $100 million fund. We're about $50 million raised on it, and about a third of the assets for the fund have been purchased. And that's where our focus is now. And it's been a really fun ride. We're all really passionate about what we do. We have a really great team, and it's really rewarding to be able to buy these distressed assets and watch them turn around so quickly. We usually hold the property for about 2 to 3 years, and watching that turnaround in those 2 to 3 years is really incredible.
So, tell our listeners, if they wanted to reach out to you, how could they do that?
Our website is clearinvestgroup.com. You can always email us at ir@clearinvestgroup.com. We're always looking for new investors. We're always looking for new deals. We're always hiring in the local cities that we go into. So definitely look us up and stay in touch with us.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show. We will be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.